Welcome to the Penguin Magic Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tate. We have a great show for you this week. The main event is the French king of rubber bands, Dr. Cyril Thomas. We discuss his approach to developing his own effects, creating his own tutorials, and we get deep into his clinical studies of psychology and magic. Nick Lacapo stops by the show to discuss the feature part of the week from Riccardo Berdini. Before all of that, we kick things off with one of our quickfire segments where your favorite magicians talk about the magic they never leave the house without. This week, Tom Gaddis joins me for the Everyday Carry. Tom Gaddis, thanks so much for joining me here on the Penguin Magic Podcast for the Everyday Carry. All right, you're going to go out for groceries. You need to get your oil change. You're going to meet up with some buddies for coffee. What is the magic you never leave your house without?
I never leave my house without Gadabout coins, Hornswoggled again, and typically Poker Dan.
Okay, well, I know about these tricks, but you're going to have to explain them because our listeners might not. Gadabout coins is a wonderful coins across routine.
It is. It's kind of a, you know, you put one in the pocket, two in the hand, they come together. A lot of magicians will see it and just think, oh, it's just two in the hand, one in the pocket. Mm-hmm. The reason I carry those three specific tricks is they have stories with them that make sense as to why I have these items on me. Mm-hmm. They also have presentations and stories that create kind of an interesting thing about me, right? Mm-hmm. People, because, you know, with Gadabout coins, the idea is that you have to carry three lucky pieces, which is funny because why would you have to carry three?
Yeah, like, usually one should be enough. Yeah.
One should be enough. Why did your family insist that you carry three? Mm-hmm. And it also explains why you have these strange looking coins in your pocket. You mm-hmm. know, like for a long time, I'd carry magic and it's like I'd go to do something and you rip it out. And the first thing people think is like, why the heck does he have that?
Yeah.
Like, or what is that? You know, so Gadabout coins, that's one thing. I can carry it in my pocket. It makes sense why I have them. The story is great. And also, the ending is just a killer. Hornswoggled again is another trick that just uses money from my billfold. But it's funny. It's great for a large crowd.
Can you describe what happens in Hornswoggled again?
Sure. Hornswoggled again is a short change routine. Mm-hmm. So the idea behind the trick is that anyone can get hornswoggled.
Yes.
Even me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you find that hard to believe, Eric, but I have been taken in. So I tell you what, I'm just going to hornswoggle this guy right here so everybody here can see how easy it is.
And then through the process of counting the bills, they end up shortchanged.
Yeah, so you hornswoggle them out of a buck, but at the end, the tables get turned and the spectator actually hornswoggles you.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And so, you know, you have to kind of end in a, listen, I really appreciate the lesson you taught me.
And then just for completeness sake, what was the third one you mentioned there?
Ode to Poker Dan.
Ode to Poker Dan. Now, I'm not as familiar with this one. I'm assuming it's a poker deal trick?
No.
No?
No, but
it's a spoon bending routine. What is Ode to Poker Dan?
So Ode to Poker Dan is a little story about one of the darkest episodes in magical history. Ooh. And it happened at the Magic Castle. And I don't know if you know this, but they used to play cards in the library there. And there was one guy who wasn't a magician. Mm-hmm. He'd always show up, Poker Dan. Mm-hmm. But he'd always beat the magicians. And when he did it, he would laugh like crazy, drove the magicians nuts, especially Vernon. So one day, those guys got together and they decided they were going to get even with Poker Dan. Mm-hmm. And you've created a little shrine, which is an envelope that says Ode to Poker Dan.
Yeah.
And you've written a short poem, so this night is never forgotten. And you basically tell a little poem, and you have four cards where they've glued all the cards to show backs.
Yeah.
So it's basically like a small packet all backs routine.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So you say they've glued, well, I mean, the poem is, here it is, the very last hand played by the gambler they no longer could stand. He was Poker Dan and on that ill-fated night. Anyway, so you're showing backs on everything. Yeah. And then the hand turns into five aces.
Yeah.
So you always say he put a smile on his face and made them all gasp by showing an ace. Then he fanned out four more. Was that enough? No, it was not. Or wait, was that enough? No, it was not. So he fanned out four more, after which he got shot. And that is the sad, sad story.
I love those tricks. And I like that you have a very specific reason for carrying them because they share something about yourself with the audience. It's a very nice thought to have about the tricks that you're going to be carrying around with you.
Yeah, well, and think about this in terms of a person that you're pulling this stuff on, right? Mm-hmm. Saying like, oh, well, you know, do you carry a good luck piece? Because I carry three.
Yeah.
Have you ever been hornswoggled? Like, mm-hmm. it's happened to me. Like, you're it's really about, it's not so much about the tricks as it is about me, right? Ode to Poker Dan. Have you ever been to the Magic Castle?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great place. But, you know, there's one, this dark thing that happened.
Gives it a more conversational element.
It is a more conversational element, and it also just makes you look like an interesting person.
Yeah.
Like, who knows about getting hornswoggled? Who knows about, you know, they would love to go to the Magic Castle. It sounds like an amazing place, you know? So when you're doing these tricks, they really set you apart, you know, and they, mm-hmm. and because they're conversational, you can do them and it doesn't seem like you're, you know, watch me be Mr. Finger Flinger.
Well, Tom Gaddis, those are three fantastic tricks. I totally understand why they're in your everyday carry. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Everyday Carry.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks so much to Tom Gaddis for joining me on the show. Be sure to go check out Tom's Penguin Live lecture. It features some really cool magic for the underground legend, Ron Bauer. On to the main event. Dr. Cyril Thomas burst onto the magic scene with his hit release, Bandaraction. He has since gone on to become a force of nature in the world of rubber band magic. He's also a clinical psychologist who's used his lab to study the actual psychological principles that working magicians like you and me take for granted. I grabbed a bit of his time via Zoom, and now you get to join our conversation.
Dr. Cyril Thomas, thanks so much for joining me here on the Penguin Magic Podcast. I have to start this off by apologizing for not having you on sooner. You have won, like, you know, partner trick of the year. You've won download of the year. You've released a string of hit effects that are all, like, each one is, like, more impressive than the last. I know that as we speak right now, you've got another trick dropping next week. It's so good to finally have you on the podcast.
Thank you very much. It has been a very long journey with penguinmagic.com, so thank you for inviting me here.
Oh, of course. I'm very happy. Of course. I want to start off by talking about, you're known for rubber band magic, because that's like all your releases, but you don't just do rubber band magic. You also do cards, coins, all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, sure. So basically, I'm a card magician, and I love cardistry. It's kind of, you know, juggling with cards. Mm-hmm. I think I've begun card magic when I was 18, so now I'm 36, so it was like half of my life before, if you can say it like that. But yeah, I began with card magic with my best friend. We were at the university, and we were with our cards showing off, you know, this kind of cardistry, trying to practice the best color change we could. And what is very interesting is that we learned magic basically with penguinmagic.com. Mm-hmm. So as French magician, not a French magician only knows the kind of French shop or this kind of thing, but we just discovered penguin magic, you know, with Oz Perlman and these kind of guys.
Yeah.
And we were like, whoa, that's insane. And I remember the first time I received this deck of cards, my first bicycle, because we don't have it in France, my first bicycle deck of cards in my mailbox, and was like, whoa, the quality of this card is insane. I remember the feeling and even the smell of the deck of cards. Yeah. That was crazy.
I have a similar sort of backstory to that, where I got interested in magic when I was like 18, 19, kind of like you. I'm 37, you're 36. We're very similar in ages. And it was like early, like discovering penguin magic on the internet when I was in my early 20s was like, it was mind blowing. That there was not just that there was like magic shops that you could order stuff from, and that, but also like how much stuff there was. I think the first thing I actually, like, the digital downloads were what was crazy, because I think the very first thing I bought was $2 Window by Jando Bozada. And I like remember seeing this tutorial and being like, oh, this is crazy. So it's really cool to hear that you sort of like got started with Penguin and now you're releasing products on this. Your products are interesting though, because you're like a sort of like a rock star in the partner program, because I don't think people realize this. We don't produce your videos. You do all of them yourself.
Yeah, that I have to give a big, big thank you to Raphael Klein. So Raphael Klein is my best friend in mm-hmm. life. We were in the university together, in the Psycho University, University of Psychology in Besançon in France. And we just discovered magic together. So basically, we just learned magic together. Mm-hmm. It was this kind of friendship competition, you know? You want to blow the mind of your friend, and every day you try to find out the best trick. And days after days, we just learn tricks. But also, Raphael, he loves to film things. He loved movie making. He loves this kind of thing. He's very, very good at it. And one day I just created, you know, some rubber band trick. And I was like, oh, maybe I could try to produce something, but I need someone to film me. And we're in this bench and say, but I could do it. And I could do a very good job. I was like, all right, so just let's do it. Go to this town. So we just go to the town of my birth, where I born, okay? And we just film it in one day, one direction, in one shot, in one day.
Wow.
And yeah, we just movie make it the second day. So in one day too. And boom, that was the first project out of nowhere. And yeah. And now he's on all my projects. So thank you, Raphael, for everything. Your job is just amazing.
He does a really, really wonderful job. And it's, can you, like, how did you sort of, so you guys started with this, like, you were wanting to release this, and then he said you could do it. What was the experience like filming your first download? Because I imagine that, like, you probably, at that point, had you ever lectured or, like, taught anything before? So, like, what was the experience like learning to teach magic on film?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I've never thought about it before, to be honest. Because there is 2 points. There is a trailer part and the tutorial part. So I think that for the trailer part, what is important for us is to have the music we will choose beforehand.
Oh.
So we have a music in our mind. We choose a music. And then based on the beats of the music, we have a feeling of a kind of context. We know that it's going to be this kind of context in this video. And based on this, it's like a dance. You have the music and you know how to adapt your moves. So for it, it's just a question of rhythm. I know that I have to make this kind of move like boom, boom, because it's on this kind of rhythm. Even if I don't hear the music, I know that inside of the trailer, we'll put this kind of things on this kind of beat. But for the tutorial part, it was something completely new. But you have to know that in real life, I'm a teacher in psychology.
Yes.
So I know how to teach a lot of different things. So I think my experience, my backup in this kind of thing was very helpful when I had to explain the main angles, the main points of every trick. I just tried to put myself as someone who learned. And sometimes when I tried to teach some setup, which some of them are maybe complicated, some of them are simple, but when they were complicated, I just tried to do the setup with my non-dominant hand. And I tried to see what is the difficult point with a hand which is not used to it.
Oh, that
and
is
it was very helpful to teach the trick.
That is a brilliant technique. I'm going to steal that from you when I'm thinking about the tutorials that I
appreciate.
That is such a great idea for teaching because I'm not ambidextrous. I am very capable with my left hand, but there's a lot of moves I can't do with my left hand. And so having to like think about that, wow, that's such a really clever technique. Is that something that came from your background in teaching psychology?
No, I think this one was very intuitive. Also, you have to know that when we film the trailer and the tutorial, sometimes we go to a pub between both of them. You know, so maybe after one or two beers, not more. You know, some ideas are very outside of the box, very naturally. So I don't know if it's the explanation for it, but no. But more seriously, I always try to place myself in the position of someone who doesn't know anything. Okay, it's when I try to teach something, I imagine that they don't know anything. They come from zero, and I have to teach something, and I have to anticipate every difficulties. So, also sometimes I just teach the trick to someone who just don't know the trick, and I see where, what are the key points. If something blocks somewhere, I have to know where it blocks. So sometimes it's also interesting to teach your trick before the release to someone who is not a magician at all, just to see if it's easy to learn, what is the point you ignore. Because sometimes you are so used to do your trick that you don't realize that something is a key point that you do naturally, but you just don't realize that you do it naturally. And you focus on the tree which hides the forest, you know, but there's a big forest behind it, and that's important. Focus on this one too.
This is the kind of thing that Nick and I talk about all the time. And, you know, I see reviews of products online. People are like, oh, why is he teaching the Elmsley counter? Why is he teaching the double lift? And you have to approach a tutorial as like exactly the way you're saying, where because it could be that the Bandaraction could have been the very first magic trick that somebody bought. And so if you assume all of the other knowledge, then this person who has no experience is going to have a bad interaction and then won't enjoy the rest of magic. And that's why sometimes very basic stuff gets explained sort of over and over and over again. But when we're explaining these basic things, that also forces us to critically think about these basic things and can actually improve we find other things that we can improve, which sounds like you're doing all the time. Out of curiosity, what kind of psychology do you study and teach at university?
Oh yeah, so I teach cognitive psychology. So all about perception, reasoning, problem solving, attention also. But in my own research, I'm more on problem solving, reasoning, I would say it, and high level and low level reasoning. So perceptual reasoning and higher level reasoning. So, and also you have to know that in my research, I use magic tricks.
Sorry to interrupt, but this week the show is brought to you by Black Door from Riccardo Berdini. Nick LiCapo joined me via Zoom to discuss this incredible mentalism utility device.
Nick, I can't believe that this is the featured product of the week because this thing is so cool. I don't want to tell anyone about it.
Oh, they're going to get a good deal on this one.
They are.
This is a great trick.
This is Black Door by Riccardo Berdini.
Yeah. Oh,
our buddy Riccardo created a monster hit with this.
It's
a utility envelope.
Where do you even start with this? Yeah, it's like, so this is an envelope. Which one do you say?
I say envelope.
I'm like, I never know what it's going to be when it comes out of my mouth. But anyway, this is a black, like, coin envelope, so it's like a narrow, you know, it's like a vertical envelope. It's not wide, it's tall, and the flap is at the top spot. And you can, let's say, put a card in the envelope, have a spec, let's say you put the King of Diamonds in the envelope, and then you hand it to a spectator, and then you do the magic, and you have them open the envelope, and they open it, and the card has changed into anything else, their signed card. Or anything else. And the good news is the other card that you put in there cannot be found.
It is.
But it is in the envelope.
I mean, we can say exactly what it is. This is a double envelope. It's a two-chambered envelope, but it's got a secret locking mechanism that only the magician can open. And you can very confidently hand this envelope to a spectator, and they won't be able to open the other side of it. And since this has come out, I've seen so many people put this in their show. They're using it for predictions, for multiple outs. There's some people who are using it for bank nights. You get two of them when you buy it, and this week, because it's on special, you can get a really, really healthy discount on it and just get a bunch of extras because this is one of those things that the problem with Black Door is it starts to solve every problem in your show and it starts to be an entire show of Black Door envelopes.
Your show just becomes thumb tips and Black Door envelopes. And also kind of like buying a new car, like once you buy Black Door, you'll start to see Black Door envelopes in other people's shows all the time. Because it really is used by a lot of people and they're handy to have around. And you can do great tricks just with the envelopes themselves. Riccardo has a great video where he teaches you a bunch of different fun tricks. Some of the card tricks you can do with the Black Door envelope are awesome.
Yeah.
You know? So, and it's a great way to make a card vanish as well.
Yep, you can do
like those are like things that are hard to do, you know, like a nice easy method to make something flat vanish. You can definitely get that done with this.
It's such an unbelievable product, and I'm so glad that we can offer on discount to our customers. Black Door by Riccardo Berdini. Check it out.
That was Black Door by Riccardo Berdini, available at penguinmagic.com. As always, our incredible listeners to this show receive 25% off the featured product of the week when they enter a special discount code at checkout. This week, that code is PORTAL. That's PORTAL, P-O-R-T-A-L, for 25% off Black Door when you enter that discount code at checkout. That code is only good for Black Door and only good until the next episode of this show airs. Now, back to my conversation with Dr. Cyril Thomas.
So I teach cognitive psychology. So all about perception, reasoning, problem solving, attention also. But in my own research, I'm more on problem solving, reasoning, I would say it, and high level and low level reasoning. So perceptual reasoning and higher level reasoning. So, and also you have to know that in my research, I use magic tricks as my, how can I say it, my ground to research things. So I use magic trick. I try to use different versions of the magic to see what happened, mm-hmm. why it worked, what is important in the trick, and just to shed a new light on some psychological principle that psychologists ignore, but that magician intuitively manipulate, even if they don't really know why it works. Okay, they know how to make it work, but it don't mean that they know how it works. Like, I can drive my car, but I don't really know how it works, to be honest, you know, and it's the same principle here.
That is so fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, for example, just an example, I had the frustration. I have two articles on the frustration contillusion, and I was like, oh, that's fascinating because it shouldn't work. I mean, when you do a frustration count, everyone should see what happened because it's not normal. What happened is not logical at all. Mm-hmm. But our perception just squeezes some elements of it to build a reality that is logical based on the big moves. And I tried to understand what kind of, I want to say personality, but it's a big trait. If some people were more sensitive to this kind of thing, if people who are more intuitive will be more sensitive to this trick because intuitively they will substitute some attribute of what they see to something more usual, which fits more with their knowledge and this kind of thing. So that's pretty interesting.
So your research, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm trying to understand and also like reframe this for our audience so that we can, because I love this idea that what you're doing is studying magical principles in a clinical way so that we can understand how it works. So your research led you to discover that people who tend to be more intuitive are more deeply fooled by the frustration count?
Or finally, it didn't work. We just tested it.
Oh, you tested it. Okay.
Yeah, but we didn't show that it was true. Basically, here, this frustration count is so intuitive that everyone is fooled by it. Mm-hmm. And even if you know how it's done, even if you kind of explain the mechanism behind it, a lot of people continue to intuitively feel it. So another example, we have a trick that we just tested recently. It's like, you know, you have a coin and you just pretend to throw it in air.
Yeah.
But you just keep it in your hand. And it's what we call the vanishing ball illusion because basically it's made with a ball.
Yeah.
And here we did it with the coin, but for one third of participants, we made it with no sound. For one third, we made it with a coin sound. Mm-hmm. And for one third, we made it with incongruent sound, like a sound of water or this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just to see what is important in this trick, in what extent our multisensorial process will fill the gap. And we just discovered that with no sound, one third of participants see the coin goes up. With the coin sound, more than two thirds see it goes up. And with a water drop sound, it's kind of in between. So it means that even if it's not a congruent sound, your brain will naturally, like a cartoon, you know, in a cartoon, the sounds are not congruent, but it works. If you see a car and a water drop when it just squeezes on another car, your brain will interpret it as a shock. And it was just to understand how our brain interprets reality that we use magic. So magic is just an open door, very original, to understand how our brain works in every kind of situation outside of magic. Just an open door for it.
That is fascinating. Did you have any other sort of observations from using an incongruent sound with the coin vanish? Because that seems like such a fascinating area to look. Like, I'm thinking of... Like Tobias Dossel has this wonderful effect called ping, where
I met him recently in a convention, and I told about him. I told with him about it because it's exactly this.
Yeah,
the cling. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and so just the idea of adding incongruent sounds to other effects, I wonder what other kind of fun stuff that'll do to people's brains. Can you sort of briefly tell me about another magical principle that you've studied with this? Because cognitive psychology is so fascinating because it's looking at how the brain works, and it's something that you are so right in that magic is this sort of open laboratory to discovering that, and we sort of intuit it all the time. I hate it when people say, let me talk about the psychology of this, because that's not, we use the term incorrectly. And studying the actual psychology of how the brain is affected by magic is endlessly fascinating to me.
So So I have a lot of different articles on the Vanishing Ball illusion. One of them was about the gaze of the magician.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that our expectations are higher if the magician looked in the imaginary trajectory of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So just to test this, we just did the same experiment. So in one condition, the magician looks at.
Yeah.
In the second one, there is a mask, a black mask, so we don't see where the magician looks. And we just discovered that we don't care about where the magician looks.
Really?
Even if the magician don't look up, it don't enhance the illusion. It's, you know, it's a big story in magic because we just learned, we are believers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of religion. We are pretty sure that this is important in this trick. A lot of old magicians and even young one will say, oh, no, no, you have to do this if you do this kind of move because this is important.
Yeah.
I mean, they never tried to do the opposite. They never experimentally tried to see what happened if they don't do what they expect to be a key move.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something is not important in this trick. And here, for example, it's a belief. People believe that this is important. But even if you don't look up, that's going to be fine. As soon as you don't look in the crucial point where you palm the coin, that's fine. Even if you just look people in the gaze, in the eyes, that's fine. And another thing that I work on is the false solution principle of Tamariers or other guys. And in one of them, you will say like, yeah, it's obvious because magicians know it, but it's not because magicians believe that it's true that we don't have to test it in the lab to be sure that it works. So I had a very easy card trick. I can't do it now, but that's a Batman deck of cards, very nice. I have a queen of diamonds on the top of my deck. Mm-hmm. I pretend to palm it. Then I show my hand empty, and I produce a queen of diamonds from my back pocket. That's the first condition. For half of the other participants, I do the same trick, but I show the queen of diamonds, snap my finger, so I don't pretend to palm it, and I produce the queen of diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
In both cases, I haven't palmed the card because in the first condition, I show that it's empty, so I haven't palmed the card. It's like the same condition. In one condition, pretend to palm it, I show it empty, so I just rule out the palming solution.
Mm-hmm.
I activate the palming solution, but I rule it out. But in the second one, I never activate the palming solution. Okay?
Yeah.
But in both cases, the palming solution is impossible. Mm-hmm. And what we discover is that when you pretend to palm the card and then show it empty, so when you activate the solution first, even if you show that it's wrong, a lot of people will struggle to find out the correct solution, which is I have a duplicate card in my back pocket, and they will struggle very much more than people which have been exposed to the condition where the false solution has never been activated. So it means that activating a false solution, even if you rule it out, even if you prove it to be impossible, so 1 less 1 isn't equal to 0, something still activated. And our hypothesis behind it is that when you activate something wrong, even if people know that it's wrong, it activates some representation. So here it activates the fact that the card is unique, that it will travel physically behind an occluder, your hand. When you show that your hand is empty, maybe people continue to believe that, okay, this is not the solution, but the fact that the card is unique and that it will travel physically, this is possible. So this is more activated than in the condition where you just snap your finger to produce the card in your back pocket. So that's pretty interesting for magician because you know that when you activate something, even if you prove that it's wrong, and it's like, you know, in the court, when someone is accused to be guilty, even if you prove that this guy is not guilty, after it, you will say, yeah, but when you look at his head, these glasses, not you, you know, but these weird glasses and this, you know, he looked like a guilty boy more than something, more than someone else, you know, something keeps still activated, like a peripheral representation. So
that is absolutely fascinating stuff. Well, I hate to say this, but we're about out of time, but I am going to have you back on to talk more about your experiments in psychology and magic. And man, maybe even we'll grab, there's the gentleman who wrote, Psychology for Mentalists, Andy Luttrell, for a deeper discussion, because this is absolutely fascinating stuff. And I love what you're bringing to the magic community. Dr. Cyril Thomas, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Can't wait to have you back again
soon. That was a pleasure. Thank you.
That's going to do it for this week, kids. Thanks so much for Dr. Cyril Thomas for being on the show, and thanks to you for listening. More upcoming show alerts. I'm going to be at the Blackstone Theater in the Chicago Magic Lounge June 1st through the 4th, and then I'm taking my touring show home to appear at the P3 Magic Theater June 8th through the 10th. Go to p3magictheater.com for ticketing information. Looking forward to seeing all the Penguin fans stopping through all the theaters that I'm playing this year. As always, we're a weekly podcast, so be sure to like and subscribe, as well as share your favorite episodes on the social media platform that you've been complaining about Jedi Survivor on. If you wanted to reach out to me about anything on this week's show, you're going to have to skywrite your questions over the Wasatch Mountain Range. I'm in Salt Lake City right now, and it is gorgeous out here. Nothing like waking up every day and looking at those beautiful, beautiful mountains. But if drawing questions in the sky isn't your cup of tea, you can always hit me up on Instagram at Eric Tate. That's at E-R-I-K-T-A-I-T. From me and everyone else here at the P3 Magic Studios, practice, perform.